This is a CBC podcast.
CBC podcasts are supported by HP Print Studio. Express your brand with HP Print Studio. Find free, customized templates to build your business identity, like letterhead, business cards, and shipping labels. Start the journey at www.hp.ca/print.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting.
So a few springs ago, when Dave's mother, Margaret, was going through a bad spot, feeling old and overwhelmed, Dave flew home for a weekend to give her a hand with the things that need a hand when the seasons are changing. He went on a Thursday night and stayed until Sunday afternoon. And while he was there, Dave took down the storm windows and put up the screens. He turned the garden, and he slept in the room he slept in when he was a boy. When he left that Sunday, he kept thinking that this was something he should have been doing for years. Since that spring, Dave has made the flight home twice a year, once every May to lay things out, and then again in October to pack them away. It makes him feel useful, connected to things gone by and to the swing of the seasons. He knows his mother looks forward to his visits. He likes that, too. So Dave was, to say the least, surprised a few Thursdays ago when he stepped out of his rented car and onto his mother's gravel driveway in the little town of Big Narrows on Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia, Canada, to see that she had hired a man, and the two of them were working away at the windows without him. The man, his white hair wispy and whipping in the wind, was up the old wood ladder with a bucket hooked on the top rung. He was washing the windows of his sister's old bedroom. His mother, with a rag and bucket of her own, was working on a pile of storms propped against the front porch. "David," she said as he stepped out of the car, her rag dangling by her side. "It's David," she said to the man on the ladder, stomping towards him in her Wellingtons, big wet splotches on her olive-colored pants. It felt good to be out of the rented car, the wind on his face. He hugged her. "How was your flight?" she asked. They walked away from the car together, instinctively heading towards the garden, which Dave was surprised to see had already been turned. He pointed at the cold frame, at the little tomato seedlings pumping away. "You've been busy," he said. "Smith's been helping," said Margaret. "Smith," called Margaret. "It's David." He came down the ladder effortlessly, almost carelessly, like he had been living on ladders all his life. It was hard to tell how old he was, but he was older up close than he was coming down the ladder. That's for sure. He was wearing a beige canvas jacket with a gray fisherman's sweater under it. The jacket was frayed at the cuffs and had clips instead of buttons. Dave was shaking his hand, trying to remember where he had heard his name before, and coveting the jacket all at once. "Nice of you to help out," said Dave. Then he remembered. This wasn't a hired hand. This was the retired fire chief. This was the guy who had sealed up his mother's laundry chute. "Get your stuff out of the car," said Margaret. "Supper's nearly ready. I have a chicken going." Dave took his suitcase upstairs and threw it onto his bed and walked to the window. With the trees still not in bud, he could see all the way down to the storefronts on Railroad Street, the steeple on the United Church at one end, and the tallest building in town, the clock tower on the town hall, at the other. He leaned into the window and sighed, his breath fogging the glass. Everything was still the same. The view from the window was the same view he had had when he was a boy. There was no other place in the world where time had stopped like it had here. It was like a whisper in his ear, the siren song of his boyhood, calling him down the kaleidoscope of memory, back to the bustle of his schoolyard, where boys traded and flipped hockey cards like carnival barkers. Yo-yos and chestnuts, stems and strings, frogs in the creek, tadpoles in a jar, red-winged blackbirds and squirrels, his old red bike. When he went downstairs, Smith Gardner was washing his hands in the kitchen sink. Dave saw him glance at the empty towel rack beside the fridge, and Dave, still on the stairs, made a move to fetch a towel. But before he took even a step, Smith reached for the second drawer to the right of the stove, pulled out a fresh towel, and shook it open. This was clearly not the first time that Smith Gardner had washed his hands at that sink. Dave glanced at the kitchen table. It was set for three. "I invited Smith to stay," said Margaret. Margaret sat down in the chair where she always sat, the chair close to the stove. For the last few years, Dave had been sitting in his father's old spot, to Margaret's right. That chair had a place set in front of it, but so did the chair where Dave had sat when he was a boy. Dave saw Smith glance at the table, and it occurred to him he didn't want to sit in his boyhood seat if Smith Gardner was in his dad's place. He didn't actually run across the kitchen. He lurched. He lurched across the kitchen, beat Smith to the table, sat down in his father's place, and then looked at Smith and half stood up again and said, "I'm not in your seat, am I?" Smith said, "I don't have a seat." But Dave didn't miss the glance that passed between his mother and this man. Dinner, as always, was plentiful. There was chicken and mashed potatoes and a bowl of peas canned and a bowl of squash fresh and a plate of bread and butter and a cabbage salad. And as they passed things around, Smith said, "My son and I were trying to work out if he had played hockey against you." "Against me?" said Dave. "He played for Port Hawkesbury," said Smith. "Midget." Dave said, "I don't think we had a town team." He looked at his mother. "You weren't on it," she said. "What about baseball?" said Smith, reaching for the butter. "Didn't the Narrows win the provincial cup a couple of times back then?" Dave shrugged. "Not when I was on the team." There was an awkward silence, as if it was obvious that was no coincidence. Margaret raised her eyebrows. Margaret said to Smith, "Tell David about your house." "He built it himself," she said. "Oh," said Dave. He was remembering his disastrous attempt to rewire an outlet in his kitchen. Maybe a whole house was easier. Dave is not by nature a morning person. He wakes up slowly and almost always later than he would like. The long flight east, the shift in time zones, the bed of his boyhood, all of these things worked on him that night. He meant to be up at 7. It was 8:30 when the slap of the ladder on his bedroom window jerked him awake. When he opened his eyes, there was Smith Gardner peering at him. He swung his legs over the edge of the bed and sat up stupidly. Smith was struggling with the outside storm window. "Morning," called Smith cheerily. Dave felt humiliated. He had planned to be up long before this. He staggered to the window. The window was stuck. "Let me help," said Dave. He gave the window a mighty thump. Smith's eyes bulged as the window flew towards him unexpectedly. And then, propelled by the sudden loosened window, the ladder tipped back ever so slightly. Smith, who was clutching the ladder, hovered there for a moment like the coyote in the Roadrunner cartoon. And then, in an exquisite slow motion, he tipped back and vanished, clutching the storm window as he went. Dave galloped downstairs and flew out the back door. The ladder was on the ground. "Smith?" called Dave. Smith was dangling above him, one hand clutching the eaves trough, the other still holding the unstuck storm. His legs were windmilling wildly. Dave managed to get the ladder up and back in place. Smith managed to get his feet onto it. When he got down, he nonchalantly handed Dave the window and said, "Thanks for the help." That night, Dave set the bedside alarm for 7:30. He woke the next morning at 7:15 to a percussive thumpa, thumpa, thumpa. He squinted at the clock and groaned. Then he swung his feet over the bed and staggered to the window. Smith Gardner was using a nail gun to erect a fence around the garden. "We want to keep the deer out this summer," said Margaret when Dave struggled through the kitchen. "We?" thought Dave, as he headed out the door, doing up his belt on the fly. "We want to keep the deer out?" Smith and Dave worked together for most of that morning. Dave fetching and holding pickets for the fence, Smith driving the nails. At noon, Smith surveyed the sky and said, "I think we could paint it this afternoon." Dave said, "Why don't you get the paint and I'll finish it off?" He almost had to wrestle the nail gun away from Smith. "Go on," he said, "get the paint." The long plastic strip of nails dangled down to his knees. He wanted to say, "This is the trigger, right?" But he didn't want to look stupid, so he didn't ask, unfortunately. Instead, Dave hefted the gun and touched the trigger ever so lightly. And the gun went off 3 quick rounds, thump, thump, thump. A volley of nails flew across the lawn. Smith threw himself on the lawn and covered his head. Dave turned to reassure him with his finger still squeezing the trigger. The barrage of nails barely cleared Smith and whizzed across the yard. One shattered the back window of Smith's gleaming pickup. It lodged in the dashboard like an arrow. Another punctured his rear right tire. And then the gun was blessedly empty. As the air hissed out of the tire, Dave handed Smith his gun back. He said, "It's really quite responsive, isn't it?" Everyone tried their best to be upbeat at lunch. But there was no denying the tension hanging over the table. When Dave came into the kitchen, Margaret and Smith were standing by the sink, whispering. When Dave made Smith tea, he saw him sniff it suspiciously before he drank any. As if Dave was trying to poison him or something. After lunch, the two of them went outside and settled into separate jobs. Smith went at the new fence with a paintbrush. Dave attacked the cord of wood piled by the woodshed with his father's old axe. Dave was out of practice, and as the afternoon wore on, he was painfully aware that Smith was outpacing him. He was determined not to fall behind. So Dave sped up. Soon Dave was cracking away at the wood like a maniac. Smith glanced over at Dave, anxiety creasing his brow. And Smith sped up too, working his way down the fence as fast as he could, trying to work his way out of range of Dave's flying axe. Before long, they had worked each other into a complete frenzy. Smith was slopping paint on the fence like he was on amphetamines. Dave, his shirt off, was bobbing up and down like a mechanical woodpecker. "Oh my goodness," said Margaret when she came out with tea. The two of them stopped and stared at her dumbly, both of them panting like sweaty weevils. "It's dinner," said Margaret. Safe upstairs, Dave leaned against the bathroom window and tried to pull himself together. Below him in the yard, a worried-looking Smith Gardner was saying something to Dave's mother while she patted his arm gently. The same way she used to pat Dave and his sister Annie when they were upset. He couldn't believe this was happening to him. His own mother, in his own house, with this man. The next morning, Saturday, Margaret put the question of Smith on the table. "This is silly," she said, "at my age. It's a mistake. I can't change my life around at this stage of my life." Dave, who had never been in the position of giving his mother dating advice, didn't know what to say. So he froze up and didn't say anything. "I'll do the dishes," he said. "Damn," he said as he scrubbed a pot. He should have said something. On Sunday morning, Dave said, "I think I'll go for a walk." "It's chilly," said Margaret. "I'll be okay," he said. He took a black sweater off a peg in the mudroom. The sweater used to be his father's. He went out the back door and stood on the lawn. It was one of those perfect spring mornings, a morning that would make anyone who had gone away and come back wonder why they had left in the first place. Margaret was right. It was chilly, but the sun was shining and it would warm up soon enough. Dave headed down the hill towards town. When he got there, he stopped in at the Maple Leaf Cafe for a coffee. It still came in a white porcelain mug with a matching creamer. He sat at the counter thinking about nothing at all, until pretty soon he was thinking about the times he had sat there with his father. He and Charlie sharing an order of French fries after a ball game, a movie, or "Don't Tell Your Mother" after dinner. Oh, Charlie. When Dave finished his coffee, he chatted to Alice at the cash, and then he wandered along Railroad Street. He passed Art Gillespie's old laundromat and ice plant, and Kerrigan's Foods. He remembered the year he built the float for the Christmas parade. The Narrows has a one-sided Christmas parade, and Dave was trying to impress what's-her-name, Megan Laurius. He hadn't thought about her for years. He was so stuck on her, and she was so stuck up. Dave, lost in thought, was no longer paying any attention to where he was going, didn't know he was going anywhere. He wandered past Kerrigan's and out the south end of town. He stopped on the Thamesville Bridge and leaned on the rusty green rail and watched the current in the river, picking out bubbles on the water surface and following them as far as he could. It was the very same spot where Charlie and he had stood the summer he was 11 years old. The afternoon Charlie had taught him how to jump. All his friends had already done it, but Dave was afraid. They were on their way home from church, fully dressed in their Sunday best. "Hold my hand," said Charlie. "We'll go together." "Mom's going to kill us," said Dave when they surfaced. "I know," said Charlie, splashing towards the riverbank. "Isn't it grand?" Charlie always believed in him. Despite all evidence to the contrary, Charlie believed Dave could do anything. Dave, lost in thought about days gone by, came to standing by the stone gates of the Big Narrows Union Cemetery. The Union Cemetery is a little square clearing where the Gillespie Road ends in a T-junction with the road to Macaulay's place. If you're in a car, you have to turn left or right at the stop sign, but if you're walking, like Dave was, you can keep going straight and walk straight into the graveyard, which is what Dave did. He walked into the graveyard and along the gravel path about halfway to the back, and then he left the path and cut across the grass. He didn't go to his father's grave first. First, he went to the far corner of the graveyard where the hill dips away and the trees are old and big, to where the graves are shaded and there are pine needles instead of grass. There was, unbelievably, still a mound of snow by the back fence. This is the corner where the old graves are. As Dave wandered among them, he let his fingers brush absentmindedly against the stones. Many of the inscriptions, worn by winter wind and rain, were too faded to read anymore. Some of the stones barely poked out of the earth, as if the ground was rising up to swallow them. "For dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return." He walked across to a newer section and found his father's stone and stood in front of it wearing the black sweater his father used to wear when he worked in the yard. "Hey," he said, "how are you doing?" Then he said, "Mom has a boyfriend." "I mean, I think she has a boyfriend." "Yeah, she has a boyfriend. And I don't know what I'm supposed to think about that. I was wondering what you were thinking. I'm assuming you already know." Dave looked at the old trees. "I keep thinking of you up here all by yourself. I keep thinking of you all alone. I don't want you to be lonely. And I wanted to know that you were, you know, I don't know. Are you okay? Are you okay with this?" He stood there for a while, and then he went to the path and fetched a pebble and brought it back and placed it on top of his father's stone. "Maybe," he said, "if you had looked after yourself, we wouldn't be in this mess." Then he said, "Sorry. I love you." He was still standing there, feeling sorry, when a green pickup rolled onto the gravel by the gates. When he looked over, he saw Smith Gardner step out of the cab and walk through the gates. He was carrying a weed whacker. When Smith saw Dave, he stopped abruptly. Dave by the grave, Smith by the gates. Dave looking awkward, Smith looking nervous. "Hey," said Dave, "it's okay." Did Smith think he was going to injure him here? Smith walked over. "I didn't expect to run into you," said Smith. "I didn't expect to come," said Dave. Smith looked down at the stone. "Is this Charlie?" he asked. Dave nodded. "I've never been here," said Smith. "I mean, I've been here plenty, too often these days, but never to see him." He held up the weed whacker and motioned at the grave. "Doesn't seem to need it." The two of them stood there for a moment, and then Smith said, "I never met him." "He was a good guy," said Dave. "He liked music." "I know," said Smith. "So does your mom. They used to sing." Dave smiled. "She told you?" "Oh," said Smith, "she's told me all about him, all about him. I don't know anything about music myself. I got the lowest score in music in all of Port Hawkesbury when I was a youngster. The opera? I don't know even a little bit about that. I haven't the foggiest how to talk to her about it." He shook his head. "So I just listen and nod." He was wringing his hands. Then he cleared his throat and he said the most stunning thing. "I thought of asking her to marry me, but I'm terrified she'd make me dance with her at the wedding." Dave didn't blink. Without thinking, not for a moment, Dave said, "You'd be fine. You could take lessons or not. You don't have to dance." It came out fast, all in a rush. And then they stared at each other as what they had said to each other sunk in. Smith was the one who changed the subject. "It's his birthday next weekend," said Smith, nodding at Charlie's stone. "He would have been 88, said Dave. 87, said Smith. Smith held up the weed whacker. "I thought your mother would want to come by. I thought I would drop by first and clean it up a bit, clip the grass, you know, whatever." He looked self-conscious. He held out the weed whacker. "Maybe you'd like to do it. It's not that bad, really." An hour later, on his way back through town, Dave stopped in at the library. He wanted to use the computers. He wanted to send an email to Morley. "Interesting day," he wrote. "I went out to the cemetery, and Smith showed up, the guy I was telling you about. I think he asked me for permission to marry my mother. I think I told him it was okay. I didn't mean to. I'm not even sure if that's what happened. To tell you the truth, I don't have a clue how I feel. Though I can tell you I miss Dad. I think all I want is for Dad to tell me he is okay with this, and of course he can't, and I strangely think that's what everyone here wants me to tell them. And I guess it is. And maybe that's what I need to hear from you. I'll be home on Friday night. I booked a flight this morning. His fingers were flying across the keys now. That's the great thing about email. You can write without thinking. I was wondering, he wrote, if maybe you'd meet me at the airport. That would be nice if you were waiting where everyone waits, if you were there to give me a hug when I came through the gate and tell me that you live me. That was a typo. He meant to write love. He meant to write love me. I don't really care if you do that, he went on, but it feels nice to write it. I just wanted to let you know it's been strange here, and I miss you and love you, and I am lucky you are in my life. I don't think I say that enough. He leaned back and sighed and stared at the screen, his hands behind his head. Then he lurched forward and pressed send abruptly without reading another word. He was afraid if he did, he might change it. It was just an old song. But he did love her, and he didn't say it enough. Why should he change a word? Thank you.
That's Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be heading out on tour this autumn. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, and the United States. They'll be making stops in Kelowna, Nanaimo, Duncan, Trail, Vernon, Prince George, Terrace, Kamloops, Abbotsford, Montreal, Kingston, Huntsville, North Bay, Sudbury, Chatham, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and Seattle, Washington. You can log on to the Vinyl Cafe website for a complete list of shows. You can find the Vinyl Cafe on the web at vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.